This is a republic if you can keep it, with former Republican Party Executive Director Jeff Timmer and former Democratic Party Chairman Mark Brewer.
Welcome to A Republic If You Can Keep It. I'm Jeff Timmer.
And I'm Mark Brewer. And just for the record, neither Jeff nor I are here because of forgery. We had enough signatures that we are validly on the air for yet another week. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by pollster Bernie Porn on the state of Michigan's politics. And later, we'll talk with longtime Republican campaign consultant and top-rated podcaster Mike Murphy, the Michigan native whose campaign credits include George W. Bush, Arnold Schwarzenegger, John McCain, and John Engler.
The already chaotic GOP campaign for governor has set a new standard for total batshit crazy chaos, with half of the candidates on the verge of being booted from the ballot because of petition fraud. I'm pleased to announce that my pants are standing by to run the write-in campaign on the Republican ballot, in my belief that my pants are more qualified than the remaining GOP candidates. Mark, you know, certainly you have played a central role in exposing the outright petition fraud that has just infested this GOP governor's race. You know, your thoughts on what's I guess fill people in on what happened on Monday with the Secretary of State's the Bureau of Elections recommendation, what's going to happen on Thursday with the Board of Canvassers meeting, and then what's likely to happen with litigation afterward. And does this have any potential to also impact these ballot initiative signatures that will start to be filed next week, beginning June 1st?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. It was an extraordinary day on Monday. Based on our 200-page complaint and a complaint, we complained against candidate Craig, and against based on a complaint against candidate Johnson, which was followed up and linked to ours, really, because we made a lot of the same allegations. The Bureau of Elections, the nonpartisan professional staff, they're not politicians. This is their job. Did an extraordinary job of going through all of the gubernatorial petitions on the Republican side, and found 38 circulators who they estimate forged almost 70,000 signatures, and the forgery extended even beyond the gubernatorial race into judicial races as well. And so they issued this incredibly comprehensive and really damning report on Monday night. I've never seen the Bureau of Elections go to this depth in terms of what they found and what they did, just page after page after page of example of forgery. And they ultimately are recommending for the board tomorrow to knock off half the Republican field, as you indicated, that several of those candidates are thousands and thousands and thousands of signatures short because of the forgery that occurred. And I think they're going to go beyond that and ask for a criminal referral. So I think it's going to be quite a day tomorrow at the Board of Canvassers meeting. This could obviously have an enormous impact on the field. Two of the front runners are in serious jeopardy of getting knocked off tomorrow. It could really narrow the field to five. And here we are just a few weeks from the absentee ballots go out. And, virtually none of these other candidates have any name recognition. And so, and Jeff, you've been in Michigan politics a long time. We're just in an extraordinary place where, in the first part of June, and the field's not set, and it looks like the field's going to be composed of nobodies, tier C or D candidates by the time it rolls around.
Yeah, instead of 10 nobodies, there's only going to be 5 nobodies is what it looks like. That's been the most significant development. But you do have the biggest spender, Perry Johnson, and the only candidate who was polling in double digits, retired Detroit Police Chief James Craig, who he's been in the campaign for a year, and I went back and looked. I can't see a single thing he didn't screw up from the day he got into this race. He screwed up his the formation of his committee. He screwed up his announcement. He screwed up his fundraising. He screwed up his every issue that he was questioned on. He screwed up and screwed up and screwed up. I thought if there was if they ever make a Mount Rushmore for shitty candidates, it could just be James Craig's face 4 times. I mean, this guy is such a clown. It's not surprising to me that he's not going to be on the ballot, but the fact that Perry Johnson isn't, Perry Johnson has the wherewithal to actually run a write-in campaign, which could, you know, make things interesting. He has the cash. And so far he's the only one who's shown he's actually willing to really dig deep in his pockets. So, it's going to be interesting, watching how this shakes out. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, you know, the board of canvassers being the sexiest position in Michigan politics has a big role to play tomorrow, but they have to, in order for now these candidates, James Craig, Perry Johnson, any, all these other, nothing burger names that I'm not even going to bother to learn. They will only appear on the ballot, if three of the canvassers vote to put them on the ballot. That they're now, because of the actions that the Bureau of Elections has taken, they're off the ballot unless three canvassers vote to put them on. And that's not going to happen. In fact, you know, you might see three or even four canvassers vote to affirm the Bureau's decision on this.
I think that's right, Jeff. I mean, the way this works is you don't get automatically on the ballot in Michigan just by filing your signatures and filing some paperwork. This board has to vote by an affirmative bipartisan vote to put you on the ballot. So it's going to take, I think, three votes tomorrow, bipartisan majority, to put each of these candidates on the ballot. They're going to go through them one by one. And, you know, we'll see where each of the board members are. We've already seen reports that the board members spent time this week at the Bureau of Elections going through the evidence, so they're not going to have to see that tomorrow. But again, this report is just really damning. And also, as you hinted at a moment ago, this could have an impact on the upcoming ballot proposals, right? I mean, three dozen circulators are out there, and the Bureau has said these are forgers. We're going to refer them for criminal prosecution. And so there should not be any of these ballot proposal campaigns out there using them. And the first test of that will be next week, when the first set of initiative petitions have to be filed. And then there's another set in July. This is going to affect some of the companies that employ those folks. There could be lawsuits against those circulators, those companies saying, you owe us millions of dollars in refunds because all you did was produce forgeries for us. We've seen some of that in the past on a very limited scale, but nothing this massive. So the ripple effect of this, and we didn't even talk about, Jeff, I want to throw this in. I think reading the tea leaves, on Monday, the DeVoses endorsed Tudor Dixon, who may well be one of the only five left standing after tomorrow. There is a challenge against her, not based on fraudulent signatures, but based on a petition defect. But again, it looks like the DeVoses were reading the tea leaves and jumped in with that endorsement. And that could significantly shake up the race as well. If she can get those kind of resources, she could compete with the Rinky and some of these other folks.
She's the only candidate in the remaining field of five who has any smart and grown-up guidance in her campaign. And so that, in effect, she's the only candidate Donald Trump knows the name of, and she's the only woman in the race. And so if the DeVos endorsement is followed by a Trump endorsement, she will be the nominee.
Well, and she'll bring all that Trump baggage with her. If she gets that, I mean, and the Democrats certainly are not going to let her get away with that. And of course, her ticket mates are going to be DiPerno and Caramo, who are out there saying the 2020 election was stolen. Big lie believers. We need an audit. Did she distance herself from her ticket mates? I mean, how does that play out in all of this?
No, her running mate is yet to be nominated at a Republican convention. The same people who gave us DiPerno and Caramo. And I think after, it's going to be a slightly different field of precinct delegates who will be the convention delegates in the August. They're going to be crazier. The Trump people have made, they're putting more effort into recruiting and electing precinct delegates yet this year in August than they did back in 2020 or 2018. So I think that the likelihood that whoever the nominee is, the convention is going to select their running mate. They're not just going to rubber stamp the selection of a lieutenant governor candidate the way they have before. Rick Snyder nearly had the wheels come off back in 2010 when he was first running, when he first nominated Brian Kelly. There was a Tea Party protest on the floor at the Breslin Center that day. And I remember all the people, I had wandered backstage and everyone was like, oh, fuck, what's going on? That seems kind of quaint, that kind of dissension within the party. They're liable to get somebody who's even nuttier or crazier than Matt DiPerno and Christina Caramo as the running mate. And it's going to be, when Michon Maddick is the running mate, it's going to be real hard to, try to convince voters anywhere in Michigan that you eat with a fork. Or if you do, it's going to be a disqualifier for a lot of the Republican base.
And we've got these looming issues. I mean, apart from all we just talked about, Jeff, Dixon and the rest of them are in a very extreme position on abortion, right? We talked about this. If Roe falls, Michigan has a criminal abortion ban that makes it a felony that will come into effect with only one exception. And I'm not even sure Tudor Dixon believes in that exception. And now, even as our hearts are breaking, this is a podcast about politics. We need to, acknowledge that the gun issue could become a major issue in the fall. And, Democrats could skillfully exploit the gun issue and the abortion issue to their advantage in the coming election.
Well, I agree. And I disagree with all those who say we shouldn't be politicizing, these incidents of mass shootings, gun violence. I say, screw that. We should be politicizing the hell out of it. It's the only way we're going to get change. We're not going to get change with thoughts and prayers and doing exactly the same thing, which is amounts to nothing after each time it happens, and just gear up to do nothing again and again and again and again. We have to face the fact that either we're willing to tolerate this, as we have for the last 10 years since Sandy Hook, we've done nothing every time it happens, which might be the case. We're just willing to tolerate this, or we're not, and we're going to force change. And that means taking candidates like those on the Republican side, running for governor, running for attorney general, who oppose things that 90% of voters in Michigan agree with, things like universal background checks, things like mandatory red flag laws, things like limiting the purchase of body armor and high capacity magazines. Those are 90% issues. The Republicans, their nominees are in the fractional small minority. They're very vocal. They're very organized, that small minority, but they are a distinct minority. And if they're staking out a position on guns, that's in the minority. If they're opposing abortion, even in cases of rape and incest, life of the mother, Matt DiPerno opposes allowing abortion, even if a mother's life is in jeopardy. And that's a position that's beyond what right to life or virtually anybody in the pro-life movement takes. I mean, that's an extreme position more extreme than I've seen from any politician. And so Tudor Dixon has been there on the rape and incest. The Republican field seems to have dug into that extreme fringe radical position that, it remains to be seen if the Democrats can collectively exploit that and manage the messaging to keep them painted into the corner, put them on defense rather than being on off, the Republicans on offense on things like inflation.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Jeff. I think there's a trio of issues, the two that you mentioned, plus this election denial, relitigate the 2020 election, which, could and I think will offend a lot of independent voters and frankly voters who used to be part of your party, suburban folks who your party used to depend on. But the Democrats have got to play it smart in terms of coming across on those issues as reasonable and dealing with those issues in a responsible way. If it becomes a fight between the two extremes, I think the Democrats could blow it.
To learn more about the state of Michigan's political climate, we're joined by pollster Bernie Porn of Epic MRA Public Opinion Research. Bernie and his team have been taking the state's political pulse for four decades. His firm is ranked by 538.com as Michigan's top polling firm. Well, Bernie, you've had some interesting numbers in your most recent poll. And why don't you tell us the lay of the land statewide as you see it? It looks like things might be a little tough for Joe Biden, but Gretchen Whitmer seems to be faring a lot better than Biden at this point.
Well, although you do have what I'll get to in a minute, the even up matchup against an unnamed Republican, but I think that an unnamed Republican is in the eye of the beholder, what they would like to see in a Republican, which is different than a Republican with a record.
They may actually have an unnamed, you know, given the state of the race, they might actually have an unnamed candidate win the primary and be running with none of the above. So we'll see how that plays out.
That's true. However, the last time she was 5 or 6 points up over Craig. But on the direction of the state, I liken that to voters think that good government and right direction is when my guys are in, and bad government or wrong direction is when their guys are in. And they usually think about the top of the ticket. And so Democrats on that question, 49% said the state is off on the wrong track. 31% said right direction. Well, the partisan breakdown, 56% of Democrats say that it's heading in the right direction. Narrow 44 to 21% plurality of independents say wrong track. And 78 to 9% of the Republicans say wrong direction. And so there's really always a breakout. And it'll be the same on the direction of the country. And favorability and job rating, Joe Biden has a 52 to 41% unfavorable rating, including 43%, very unfavorable. That's a little different from the last time when it was 50 to 42. So that hasn't changed all that much. And the same thing is true of the job rating. 69% gave him a negative rating, and that's very, very high. Only 31% gave him a positive rating. But that's pretty much unchanged from the last poll when it was 66 negative rating and 32%. Positive rating. Now, obviously, we didn't have any matchups, but he is still doing better than Donald Trump. 54% have an unfavorable opinion of Donald Trump and 40% favorable. It was 39% favorable, 52% unfavorable. So he's gone up a couple points, just as Biden did in terms of the unfavorable rating. And the governor's ratings, she has a higher favorable rating with 50% giving her a favorable rating, 45% unfavorable. And on her job rating, that is only slightly underwater at 52% negative job rating, 47% positive. It was 52 to 45 the last survey. So that hasn't changed all that much. We also had the names for DiPerno, Nesso, Caramo and Benson in the survey, and DiPerno, 83% have no idea who he is. 85% have no idea who Caramo is. Benson and Dana Nessel are both at 42% non-recognition. That is not unusual even for incumbents, because I can remember when Dick Austin lost. He was still at like 30. This is after decades. He was at like 35% not recognizing him. And our poll at that time showed that he was likely to lose to Candace. And so that's not unusual to have those kind of numbers for Secretary of State and Attorney General. In the matchups, here's where the media has played up, I think, to a certain extent, the unnamed Republican against Whitmer, 46% choosing the unnamed Republican, 45% choosing Whitmer in a matchup. But Whitmer leads in the direct hard vote, 39 to 36. It is only with the leaners, after we asked undecided voters which candidate do you lean toward, that the unnamed Republican then leads by 1 point. Now, again, unnamed Republicans, it's kind of in the eye of the beholder. Voters will think that's the candidate that they envision for the Republican Party. And And also, the unnamed Republican is running stronger among independent voters. That is not necessarily the case in the race for Attorney General or Secretary of State, where Nessel only has a 2-point lead over DiPerno, 43-41. In the direct vote, it's 33-30, a 3-point lead, just like with the governor's race. And that is a 2-point lead. I know a Republican pollster about a week or so ago said that it was a 1-point lead. And so I think that that may well be fairly accurate in terms of a reflection of what our number is. For Secretary of State, Benson is leading by 9 points, 47-38, 37-29 in the direct vote. And then we did include a question that do you think that Joe Biden and the Democrats stole the election from Donald Trump, or do you think that Joe Biden won the election fair and square? And this is important because you have, I think, certainly the candidates for Attorney General and Secretary of State on the Republican side believing the big lie in terms of Biden having stolen the election. And so that is something that when you look at these numbers, 61% say that Biden won the election fair and square. Only 27% say that it was stolen from Trump, 12% undecided. But among Democrats, 97% say that Biden won fair and square. 66% of independent voters say that independents say that Biden won fair and square. But among Republicans, only 57% say the election was stolen. Now, in a poll in Georgia that I heard about yesterday, 75-80% said that the election was stolen among Republicans. So Michigan is a lot different than among Republicans on that question. And so that may help Republicans in a primary, but it certainly is not going to help them in the general election. The other issue that they have to confront Republicans is on the question that we included on whether or not if the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade, would you agree with that position, that decision, or disagree? A very solid 63% said that they would disagree, 54% strongly, and bipartisan breakout, 26% said that they would agree with it. Bipartisan breakouts, 89% of Democrats say they would disagree with the decision. 68% of independent voters would disagree, and only a 48-36% plurality of Republicans would agree. And so even among Republicans, your Oakland County Republicans, I think, and East Lansing Republicans who are more, especially Republican women who are more pro-choice, would have a problem, I think, with a position by Republican nominees who certainly, if they go to the extreme of saying no exceptions, because on our follow-up question on do you consider yourself pro-choice or pro-life, the highest number we've had is 57% saying they consider themselves pro-choice. Usually it was only a 4 or 5 point differential, 33%, a 24-point difference, say they're pro-life, and they're against abortions except to save the life of the mother. And here you have some candidates that are taking the extreme position that even in the case of saving the life of a mother, they are against that as well. And I think that could potentially create a serious problem for Republican candidates against Democrats who are all supporting the pro-choice and against the Supreme Court decision if that should come to pass.
So, Bernie, based on, thank you for all that great data. We really, really appreciate you sharing that with us. But based on that data and, you know, your experience, I mean, you've been involved in Michigan politics for decades.
Trees were new.
Could you give us your assessment of the top of the ticket, the top three races in the state? Where are those races? What's your assessment?
Well, right now they're close, but the Democrats haven't run ad one yet, and they haven't differentiated themselves from the Republicans. And when you have Republicans, at least for two of the positions, and possibly three, the governor's race, that are going to take an extreme position, certainly in favor of the Roe v. Wade decision. And if, in fact, there is a successful drive to put a ballot proposal on the ballot on abortion, that could make it front and center in terms of that, making that issue very, very important and having voters actually having to decide on that. That could put Democrats in a much better position than they're at right now. And they still need to get some strong messaging. And there are things that Democrats can take advantage of in terms of messaging that they can use. However, they haven't done that yet. Focus group after focus group and poll after poll show that even Democrats are not sure what Democrats have done. That's why on a job rating question, you have only 63% of Democrats giving Joe Biden a positive job rating. That's because they don't know what they have done.
It also seems, though, that DiPerno and Karamo are so unknown, there's a tremendous opportunity to define them negatively, right? Nobody knows who they are.
When I have a candidate that is unknown by that number, and you have candidates that are much, much better known at all three levels, and you have a positive favorability rating for all three, I mean, that's a no-brainer. I would define the opposition candidates right after I do some strong bio information on the Democrats. And it would also quickly go into contrasting messages, because I think with contrasting messages, bad, good, that I think that Democrats should be in Michigan in a much, much better position than Democrats are in a lot of other states.
I would agree with that assessment. And I think that even though you named the candidates Karamo and DiPerno, they really do register kind of that generic Republican support in, you know, that seems, because they're such unknown quantities. Those names aren't very well known. And as they become known, about the only thing they can hope for is to get these numbers that they've got today. When you have somebody like Matt DiPerno, who's gone so far as to say he would even support an abortion ban if the mother's life was in danger. Talk about extreme. That's a position that Right to Life of Michigan doesn't hold. And, you know, virtually nobody on the planet Earth would hold except Matt DiPerno. Yeah. And you know, that's once people become aware of that, the guy has, it seems like, you know, he's going to be a problem. Karamo is just, opposition researcher's dream when it comes to the crazy stuff that she has said. So I think that if the Democrats play their cards right here, that they have an opportunity, despite whatever happens nationally, if there is any, you know, headwinds that they're facing across the country, Michigan seems like a place where they can defy that if it in fact happens anywhere.
Yeah, I would think that it's a dream come true to have Karamo and DiPerno on the other side for Democrats to run against. And I understand that the DeVosses are now supporting Tudor Dixon. And is her position on abortion not very similar?
I know that she opposes, you know, the rape and incest issue would force, you know, women, girls to carry a pregnancy to term, even if they were raped. That's clearly a position that 85 or 90% of the country disagrees with, and a large number of Republicans when it comes to something like that. When you get into those details that are far beyond just Roe versus Wade, when you get into those specific examples, that really paints them into a corner. When you get into issues like we're dealing with this week with universal background checks and red flag laws with guns that these candidates all oppose. Those kinds of contrasts are going to matter. And, that's something that none of these Republicans have gone up against yet. Nobody knows their extreme positions on this.
Yeah. And we have tested on guns all of those issues. And although Michigan is a strong gun possession state, still background checks overwhelming support and the red flag laws overwhelming support. We tested that for the anti-gun lobby, and clearly that would be another issue. They have to be careful on assault weapons, because there's a some variance on that issue that would suggest caution.
Bernie, you mentioned this, you touched on it a little bit ago. I think there's also an opening here for the Democrats in terms of both Caramo and DiPerno and whoever runs as a Republican, believing that the 2020 election was stolen. We need an audit. Biden's not our president. Your data seems to indicate that the voters don't believe that.
Well, as a matter of fact, because the national media has been pointing toward Michigan and talking about how the candidates chosen as Trump nominees or recommendations are believing that, we were not going to release that number on that question. Because I was going to wait for the media polls that we do, but because of all the national attention, I said let's release that, because that has very strong numbers based on the numbers right now, and we've tested it before and it has gone up in terms of fair and square by about 5 points. And yep. So clearly that is an issue that is going to create a problem for the Republican nominees, and depending on who the Republican nominee is for governor, I think that will create a problem for them too. But Democrats have to not be bashful about running contrasting ads. And as you know me from the past, I've never been reluctant. Back when I was in the Michigan House, there were a few of the House Dems who referred to me as Donald Segretti.
I don't think any of the three of us in this conversation have ever been shy about running negative ads or contrast ads, right, Jeff?
Right, and sometimes against each other's preferred clients or your candidates. So with that, Bernie Porn, Epic MRA, thank you so much for sharing this information with us. We really appreciate it, and thank you for your sponsorship of A Republic If You Can Keep It.
Thank you.
Let's take a quick break so we can hear from our paying customers.
When candidates and government leaders need the facts about their voters, they turn to Practical Political Consulting.
PPC has served political candidates, organizations, campaigns, and businesses for more than 45 years. They work with savvy campaigns to provide the best voter lists available in Michigan, as well as campaign consulting, graphic design, and polling at competitive prices.
Over their storied history, PPC has worked with thousands of campaigns, providing them with, as the New York Times once said, quote, the best lists possible in this competitive state, along with unique and individualized strategy.
They've worked with small campaigns for rural school board, all the way up to occupants of the White House. They are also renowned for their work with ballot initiatives, both for challenges and protections.
Find out more. Go to www.practicalpoliticalconsulting.com or call 517-351-5105.
Show your support for preserving our republic at the A Republic If You Can Keep It merch store. We've got t-shirts and coffee mugs made to order for lovers of our representative democracy. Just go to our website, arepublicpodcast.com, and click on the merch store button. You aren't fully dressed until you have Ben Franklin on your chest. It's the perfect gift for that democracy lover in your life.
Epic MRA is pleased to be a sponsor of this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm whose principals have more than four decades of experience measuring public opinion on federal, state, and local issues, from who's ahead in a race for governor or Congress, to local support for a proposed zoning change.
Our clients include media outlets, school districts, state agencies, local governments, and membership organizations across the state. Whether it's measuring voter opinions about who's up or down in elections, or if ballot proposals or legislation enjoys public support, Epic MRA has been Michigan's premier go-to pollster for 30 years.
Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
Mike Murphy is a native Detroiter who cut his political teeth working in Michigan politics and went on to become one of the nation's most highly sought after Republican campaign consultants.
His first major campaigns were in Michigan, working on behalf of U.S. Senator Spence Abraham and Governor John Engler. Since then, he's been a top campaign advisor to so many in the Republican Party, including John McCain, Jeb Bush, Tommy Thompson, Christy Todd Whitman, Lamar Alexander, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the list goes on.
These days, he's co-host of what Jeff and I consider to be one of the very best bipartisan political podcasts, Hacks on Tap, where he partners with Obama administration veterans David Axelrod and Robert Gibbs.
Mike, as we welcome you to the podcast, we also thank you. We totally stole the concept of civil bipartisan political discourse that anchors your podcast, using the same philosophy as the foundation for a republic, if you can keep it. So welcome. We're glad to have you.
Well, I am glad to be here. I love Michigan politics. Happy to talk about anything. And yes, we steal everything we do. So let's just pass on the klepto podcasting here and have fun with it.
Well, you know, there's certainly no lack of anything to talk about, but why don't we start with kind of the macro environment? We just, in the last half hour, we were talking with Michigan-based pollster Bernie Porn, Epic MRA.
Sure.
And he's out with numbers today that has Joe Biden at 31% job approval in the state. Whitmer just slightly under 50%, 47-52, just slightly upside down in her job approval, running well ahead of Biden. But, you know, do you see that there's, you know, this Republican tailwind, headwinds for the Democrats? How do you assess the national macro climate?
Well, it's pretty bad. You know, the wrong track is bad. Biden's numbers, even out here in deep blue California, are not good. There's still some time, and there's some new developments between the big fight we're going to have over guns and Roe that give Democrats like Whitmer something to work with, which, you know, they didn't have. Now, let me say, I've got an 8-year-old daughter, so I'm in a blind rage about what happened in Texas and heartbroken about it. So it's hard to talk about it as a political mechanic here the day after, but I'll try. We did that this morning on Hacks on Tap, and we all had to kind of control our rage. But to your question, midterms for a new president are always hard. And I think Biden is suffering from kind of a multiplier effect. One, he doesn't get any credit for the stuff he's doing well, like managing NATO and the Ukraine, because most voters, you know, they're rooting for one side, but it's not in the middle of their lives. Second, inflation is a politician killer, and it's here. And, you know, if you're in the big chair, it gets bolted onto you. So that is a big problem. Three, I think the White House communications on domestic policy has been lousy. Build Back Better to me sounds like a chain of chiropractor offices. I don't know why they didn't pick a fight over some bumper stickers people understand, like child care, prescription drugs. So all those things have combined to put him in, at least now we got some campaign left, a pretty tough situation, particularly in competitive states like Michigan. So I think it's going to be up to the Gretchen Whitmers of the world, who aren't in as much trouble as Biden, but are in trouble and easier to do in a governor race than a Senate one, to localize it and push Biden out of the frame by making the race a battle about other things and the quality of the candidate. I mean, this is got an environment where a lousy Republican can still win in the tidal wave. So she's got to make sure they're extra lousy. And, you know, it's the same in many of the other swing states, and then find relevant kitchen table economic stuff she can run on, so she's not caught up in that Biden tidal wave, which looks pretty grim right now.
Well, you know, certainly the Republicans seem to be doing their damnedest to help her out when it comes to, you know, yep. in Michigan, especially, you know, they entered this month with a field of 10 candidates running for governor. That looks like it's about to be down to 5 as of tomorrow. And well, after the litigation that will undoubtedly come, that Mark is involved in. And so the opportunity for her to seize control of this race is certainly there, especially as the Republicans are going to enter in the summer here as we head into June, not even knowing what their field of candidates is, let alone any of them breaking, you know, more than 8% in a public mm-hmm. opinion survey.
Yeah, and the down ballot candidates look like a clown car. you know, after the convention. So on the candidate side, no doubt she's had a lucky break. And then you're going to have a Roe fight, which in parts of Michigan won't help her, and other parts really will.
Yeah, on the Roe piece, I want to ask about that, but you thought that kind of throws a lifeline to her. And also the gun issue, which again, mm-hmm. sadly, you know, our hearts are bleeding for what's happened in Texas yesterday, just terrible.
Yep.
But it has now injected it. We had a huge fight in the state Senate today yep. over discharge and voting on gun legislation that's been stalled by the Republicans for months. So, you know, what's your take? The gun issue, abortion, a lifeline for Democrats?
It's something to work with, something they didn't have a while back. On the abortion issue, you know, people forget that the most pro-choice group in America is young men. We're also the group that's hardest to get to vote in an off-year election. So maybe it becomes the turnout weapon for the Democrats. You know, people tend to simplify that issue. And in you know, suburban anywhere, but including Michigan, which has traditionally had, you know, a strong pro-life movement, but still, you know, the demography is changing, and what the Democrats really need is a way to get their presidential year voters to actually do what they almost never do, show up in a midterm. And Roe can make it a crusade, and crusades can turn people out. Now, on the gun issue, you're right, I was following that. You know, the standard politics are it's entrenched. The amount of people who will defend any gun right is small but vocal, so they're powerful in primaries. But I think if Biden is smart about this, they cook this thing and make it bigger. I mean, I think he ought to say, we're going to have a vote in 4 weeks. We're going to have hearings in a week. And I'm calling for 1 million people to march on D.C. Parents, bring your kids. And just turn up the heat and boil it to turn it into a wedge issue that can work. I mean, we know I consider myself a Second Amendment guy, but I've seen the polling and I've done some work with Bloomberg on this. Background checks are supported by everybody, Republican primary voters, gun owners, and the numbers are huge. That is a good fight to have. There's also some of these red flag laws, because this thing is a two-part deal. It's not only trying to get after the guns, it's also trying to get after the relatively small but big enough to be a problem number of troubled young men who go down this path and wind up with an easy to obtain military weapon and go do horrific murdering crimes. So, you know, and Lindsey Graham's even on a red flag bill in the Senate. So there, I don't know. We argued about this on Hex on Tap today, and this, the CW, and, you know, I can't bet against it as though nothing will ever change, but there is a huge public deal here, and Biden leads it rather than doing commentary about, well, you know, I've worked on this a long time and those damn Republicans. Well, boil it over, you know, make the run. And if that happens, if we get 1 million people marching on DC in June or July, then I think the politics starts to change. And I've seen data that, you know, I think, sorry to ramble on here, but as somebody who's worked on this issue, we got Senator Toomey in his last campaign, you know, open seat in Pennsylvania. Now, we got reelected on background checks. He had the brave vote. We did an independent expenditure, spent about, God, I don't know, $12 million. And what we did in the Philadelphia suburbs is what saved them. So you can go on offense on that issue. The left often does the gun thing wrong. You ought to run it like a primary within the world of gun ownership and chisel them off rather than do the frontal assault, which turns into the, you know, Bernie Sanders and AOC want to take your hunting rifle. So if they get better at it and they can harness this, yeah, I think it could be a cutting issue in swing states like Michigan.
Because I was saying, you know, I'm watching TV last night and I'm seeing Michael Moore all over MSNBC.
Right.
You know, talking about we need to take the guns. Okay. So they're giving plenty of ammunition on that. And then you get like, you know, and God bless them, the Parkland kids like David Hogue and people like that talking about how they're going to call on Biden Biden hasn't done enough. So they're going to be attacking Biden or putting pressure on Biden right. In a way that's not helpful. It's not doing what you're suggesting. It's snatching again, I think, a defeat from what could be the jaws of victory, or certainly, you know, this whole notion of, oh, we can't politicize this. I say, you know, screw that. Hell yes, politicize the hell out of this. That's the only way it's going to get changed. That's the only way we're ever going to do anything differently. But it seems like we're falling right back into those old patterns that lead to inaction and just the next time and the next time and the next time in, you know, Groundhog Day conversation like this.
Yeah, politics is so tribal now. Everybody wants to turn up the volume saying things that Trump already agrees with. When the key, and this is, you know, back when the Republican Party in Michigan wasn't what it is now, we had some success because we would always want to play on the Democratic side of the board. You know, we talk about education reform, things like that. And that's a much better place to be fighting a campaign than screaming at your primary voters what they already believe. But, you know, the Dems have that disease. And, you know, our primary world is, you know, we can see has gone completely crazy. I mean, like Pennsylvania, Dr.
Go
Oz.
Ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I don't mean to ramble on here. But you look at most of the major contested primaries, with the exception of Georgia, which we ought to talk about. Poor David McCormick, who's a serious person, had to basically put on a Chewbacca suit and pretend he's something he isn't. Now he's arguing for the mail-in ballots. And he's right, legally. They're stamped, so you know the date's legit. But the RNC is coming out attacking him. The NRSC, the Senate committee, I'm sure is all for him, but they can't say it. So, you know, we get these contortions and this craziness. And that's the one hope the Dems have in a year like this, is our candidates are bad enough. And I don't know what to say about Fetterman. I can't decide in Pennsylvania if he is kind of an attractive Uncola anti-politician that could catch on because he's different in a year where people are pissed off and hate politics, or if he's going to be kind of Bernie Sanders and they're just going to steamroll him that way, which is, of course, what they're going to try to do. I mean, I remember back in Michigan days, old I can't remember. I'm choking on his name. Democrat trial lawyer, kind of
Feiger.
Feiger was Mr. Anti-Politics, you know. So sometimes that can catch fire, but often it does not.
Well, it caught fire in that primary, but it didn't work in the general.
Right, exactly, Mark. Exactly, and that is probably the more likely outcome. But who knows, Doc Oz? They're going to find a trunk full of leeches or something, and then the race will be about him, not Biden, and that's the opening.
No, you mentioned Georgia. Let's talk a little bit about Georgia, because that certainly went off script for the Republican Party of 2022 and delivered a rebuke in the three big statewide mm-hmm. races. You know, delivered a rebuke to Donald Trump and his fantasy delusion about the 2020 election.
Yeah, you know, all this. It was a if you hate Trump like I do and other people in the you know, the resistance and on the Republican conservative side, we were all delighted. On the other hand, we're also depressed about Texas. It was hard to have the party we wanted to have. But what fundamentally happened was, and this is a lesson, and this will have an impact in the inner Republican world. You can see this coming. The polls showed it for a while. Governor Kemp down there is a totally comfortable, adroit politician at working the grassroots issues in the Republican Party. So Trump didn't have anything to work with against him other than the kind of crazy guy in a bus stuff about, they stole the election from me with mind control and aluminum foil ballot. Blah, blah, blah. And on all of the other stuff people were interested in the Republican base world, Kemp was fine. And he was the incumbent and he was fast on his feet. The other thing about Kemp, which made him different and was part of his success, he was a tough Paul who understood standing up to bullies can work. Way back when the Senate seat opened up, Trump called him up and said, oh, here's my Fugleman, you know, appointed to the Senate. And Kemp said, no, it's my state. I'm the boss here. Very few people do that to Trump. And that began the grievance thing that led to the war. It was Trump's biggest race. He, you know, took David Perdue out of the ash heap after he narrowly, so he was still a thing, won, lost that Senate race and threw him at Kemp, and the margin's incredible. Kemp destroyed him.
I think even plus points. I mean,
yeah, it was a crushing deal in a Sunbelt Republican primary, which shows this idea. Trump is very powerful in the Republican world, but he's not omnipotent. And the Raffensperger thing is even bigger. I mean, Raffensperger showed Liz Cheney style bravery. Now, in his reelect, he was out there talking about the border, you know, talking about Joe Biden, worst president, doing the Republican base stuff. But Trump went right after him with a member of Congress who had a base, Jody Heiss, in the state. And again, Raffensperger won the damn thing. Probably some crossover Dems helped him, but without a runoff, which is what a lot of us thought would happen there. And even Carr, the attorney general, was not the Trump choice. And he clobbered him by, I think, double digits. So I think Georgia is going to be the beginning of a recalc in the Republican world, which is if you cover the base issues, Trump can marginalize himself as the crazy backward guy whining about the last election. That doesn't mean you take on Trump. If, you know, Tony Fabrizio did an interesting study maybe a year ago about the tribes of the Republican Party. And there's about, you know, there's only 15% are kooks like me who hate Trump and say it. But among the other 85%, half are ready to move on. Just don't tell them they're idiots for having supported Trump. And the DeSantis's, the I'm blanking out his name, Cotton, Senator Cotton, Arkansas. The people who are humming Hail to the Chief in the shower and memorizing towns in New Hampshire right now, they're learning that lesson. Now, I don't like populist dingbat conservatism, so I'm not crazy about this, but it's better than Trump, you know, a madman. So I think that the emperor still has some clothes, but not nearly as many as he did a day ago in the GOP.
What role is Pence playing in all this, Mike? What's your take on what Pence is doing? He was here last week in Michigan endorsing the DeVos voucher proposal. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he seems to be angling for their support. That was much more than about Michigan. Yeah. And he seems to be more and more openly taking on Trump. What's his play? What's going on there?
Oh, he's running for president. I mean, you know, a lot of these people are doing the preseason thing where they run to get in a position to run. But Pence's theory is the evangelical base he has never been. It was a marriage of convenience with Trump. Trump is not the sharp Trump of 2016 talking about stuff people cared about. He's now talking about himself being ripped off in the election. It's all a crazy ego meltdown. The new factor is gone. So Pence is thinking, if I can get the evangelicals back because I'm the real thing and they like me and I've got name ID, I could be a viable non-Trump alternative. You know, I can claim credit for everything he did and I've got my one shining moment. And I've got that evangelical base. Now, it's not that powerful in the early states, but in an Iowa caucus, if Pence could beat Trump there and he goes into Hampshire bleeding, you know, I the conventional wisdom is Pence is dead. I don't think he's the front runner. I think he's got some rearview mirror problems and everything else, but he's got some cards to play. You know, I think he's being totally rational. He's going to try to line himself up and do what he can. And his big move was showing up. He campaigned for Governor Kemp. He picked the Kemp side, and they won by 50 points. So Pence is a foot taller today, I think, in the presidential bragging world than he was a week ago.
I still question whether or not Hillary Clinton has a better chance of winning a Republican nomination than Mike Pence. But I don't disagree with your assessment, though, that he does have his base, and it will take a lot of rehab because there's still a good part of the party's base that was hanging Mike Pence.
I would say is, can he raise table stakes to Annie in the game? Yes, and so far he's growing that pile of quarters a bit. Does it make him a front runner? No. I mean, DeSantis can because he's the cultural issues and the Florida base gives you an Annie in, and then one or two guys out of the Senate. And then you might see somebody like Fox News or, you know, like Dan Crenshaw, member of Congress, SEAL, smart guy, slumming a little, but he's interesting. He could get discovered. You know, you just kind of make the short list of who might be able to ante in, and I would put Pence on it, but I agree he's got problems.
You mentioned, and this is, I wondered if there was any parallels that could be drawn or that Liz Cheney world is looking at Georgia last night, or if the personality contrast is just so different here, if Wyoming is just so much different than Georgia, or is this a sign of life for the Liz Cheney campaign in Wyoming?
Well, it's a mixed bag, and, you know, I'm all for Liz. The difference is Governor Kemp just steamrolled over Perdue and Trump without really engaging in them. He just sucked all their oxygen out and, you know, was a droid and, again, was very comfortable in that world. He was never the country club moderate. Liz, you know, and these governor races are always easy to escape the Washington stuff because when you're running for Senate or Congress, it's all about which team are you on. In the apocalyptic death struggle in D.C. When you run for governor, roads, highways, and my program. So he had a little more runner room. Cheney directly took on the House Republicans. Mm-hmm. So she's got vulnerabilities that Kemp was able to avoid getting sucked into. Now, I think she deserved the Profile Courage Award she got the other day. It is an open primary in Wyoming, and I think you will see, like people believe we got to do the analysis, happened with Secretary of State Raffensperger down in Georgia, she will get some crossover. Because every once in a while, there's a high-profile race. I remember when Eric Cantor, the Republican whip, lost. The conventional wisdom was that Laura Ingraham took him out with radio. And Cantor was a friend of mine, and I took a look at that thing. And one, there was no radio station with her in the district. So, you know, other than online, which is significant, but that seemed. And then Virginia has no party registration, so anybody can vote. So what happened? Well, obviously, a bunch of bored Democratic primary voters there said, hey, let's go vote for the kook and punish Eric Cantor. And they did. I made them do a post-election poll, and among Republicans, Cantor won. So this could be the reverse of that. We could have hobbyists who come in to help Cheney for the good of the country. And I know the Cheney people have a program to welcome all voters who care about the Constitution and rule of law to participate. Can they do that lift? Cheney brand there is worth a lot, but it's going to be a tight race, and she will need to kind of water down the base GOP whiskey there. You know, the big problem in the Republican primary, because things are so tribal, if you're not adroit like Kemp was, and even Raffensperger or Carr, the AG candidate down there, it becomes a tribal thing where, you're rooting for the New York Times. You know, you're a traitor. You're not with us. So therefore you must be punished. And among base Republicans, Cheney's in that vice, but she has a lot of tools to maybe be able to escape it. And the candidate running against her, Hageman, is no superstar. That's the good news. A lot of these Trumpy candidates like still have a hanger in their suit. And that, you know, that's hopefully a bit of a drag too, though Liz has a real tough race there. That's the fact.
Yeah, because certainly that would be the biggest symbolic defeat for.
Oh, totally.
Would be much bigger than Kemp in terms of, you know, perhaps breaking the fever on the center right.
I totally agree with those tough votes. Like Fred Upton's a friend of mine, and there was some polling done. And as much as Fred is beloved in that district, the impeachment vote.
Yeah.
Which Fred was proud of, and I think history will be very kind to him. That's the silver bullet in a Republican primary right now in a federal race.
Can certainly understand that, and I think that's a good assessment. You know, Fred Upton left because he saw the writing on the wall. Yeah, he's been there 36 years; he's done his good. But the chances of him coming through that primary, no matter how much money he had, were slim to none.
You know, it's funny. Spence and I were talking this weekend about it. We're like, hell, Fred should have run for governor. You know, if he'd gotten the petitions right, it would have been interesting right now in a multi-way like that with a West Michigan base. And then he could beat her, you know.
Right. So anyway, they can actually eat with a fork. I mean, I don't know if the Republicans are ready for that right now.
If we had a time machine, it was the one moment where Upton for governor might have worked.
Yeah, no, I agree. Even with the field of 10, he'd probably be the front runner. And who knows after tomorrow. With a field of five, he certainly would be the front runner.
Yep, right in Fred.
Absolutely. And he would smell like a winner in the general, so the pragmatic money would be for him.
Yeah, I think that's right. Well, moving to Michigan, you know, one of your favorite places, I know.
The revolutionary right. cradle. My dad still lives there.
Okay. Well, you know, you just talked about this crossover voting, and I think that could be a phenomenon this summer. I mean, Whitmer's home free. She's going to be the Democratic nominee. You're going to have a lot of Democratic primary voters come August, you know, looking, I think, to play some mischief in whoever is remaining standing on the Republican side. You know, and you got five candidates, you know, some of that rating, which Michigan is favored, known for, could have an impact on who the Republican nominee is.
Yeah, no, look, I think so. It'll be the opposite of the Raffensperger or Cheney ambition, and not to do good, but to make trouble, like the Cantor thing. And, you know, Saldana will be loud and crazy. Tudor Dixon, if she can get the boss and other money and get on television, will get something going. But will also, among Democratic primary activists, they're going to hate her. You know, she's going to be Sarah Palin to them. And Trump, who has a soft spot for telegenic candidates, may discover her and bless her. So I can see a perfect storm for her both to win the primary, but also to attract Democrats who want to make trouble, you know, voting against her for whoever the second loudest person. Yeah, I don't know if Rinke is going to spend any money. There are a lot of bluff in there, and he's got his own problems, according to the Detroit News. So the primary is going to get kind of interesting now, I think.
Well, back on this piece with Tudor, I'm interested in your views on this, because I think, as Jeff mentioned, she got endorsed this week by the DeVosses.
Right.
And they're no fans of Trump anymore. So I'm wondering whether she's going to get caught up now. Can she accept a Trump endorsement, given that the DeVosses are in her corner? What's your take on all of that?
If Betsy is comfortable with her, which I think she probably is because of that, they might let her play the Trump, you know, puppet show game. The question is, will the DeVosses, you know, they do an event in West Michigan, great. Will they put an independent expenditure together?
Right.
And all of a sudden there's $4 million of TV pushing her to the front of the pack. That'll be the real test. And then, Trump, who can be a pilot fish, may just jump along. But as long as they've had the secret handshake, Betsy's a pretty pragmatic politician, and she'll want to win. And if Whitman's numbers don't correct, and if Dixon has money, and they can, and Zolik and the other people around that, Charlie Spies, they can get her out of a primary mindset, since she's unknown and she's not doing crazy pants based stuff unnecessarily, then she can be a competitive candidate. But she could also spiral into MAGA madness. So it's going to be an interesting test of her team if they understand a general election. The Republican Party is very good now at treating base voters like swing voters, and appealing to them way beyond. In the old days, we tortured the base a little, because that's how we'd gain yard in the general election. You know, they're like Napoleon's infantry. Somebody said to him once, "Hey, you lost your army." "Yeah, but I'm halfway to Russia. Get me a new army. They're here to die." You know, so they don't think like that anymore. And it's quite possible she'll spin herself into a Palin, Christy Noem kind of cult of personality thing and blow the general. Though, again, this year, you don't have to be that good to win a general election.
Yeah, I'm still trying to get over her career in what was softcore vampire porn or whatever the the deal that she did there.
Oh, so that's where 5 points in Macomb County. Come on.
Yeah. Celebrity. But it may have a little biting effect in that evangelical base.
West Michigan will be. I'll never forget. We were doing there's a Terry Branstad, my old client, you know, reelect change 16 years as governor. And then he went back for a few more terms. Fred Grandy, the TV congressman, was the Love Boat guy, was running against us.
Right.
And we had this, and he was, you know, shiny and new. And we had old Terry, you know, raise farm incomes for the 15th term. So it was a really competitive primary, and we were behind. And, you know, that's a partially evangelical primary. And our campaign manager at the time, Brian Kennedy, came back with all these, you know, Fabio novels that Catherine Mann, who had been a local TV celebrity in Philly, had written with some success. And so got a bunch of the evangelicals out there to do a reading from the smut, you know, the stable boy glisten. And, you know, it was just drugstore stuff, but it became a thing.
Right.
So, yeah, they're probably have a, you know, Saldana will hand out sunglasses and, you know, over 30 only for a screening of it. Again, this could be very entertaining. I'm just saying, now that the signature clown car thing, you know, and apparently let's give John Yob an award for, you know, yet again screwing something up, that will give her a moment.
Yeah.
And she might use it smart. She might use it dumb. Is Chuck still around, by the way, just to go in the Yob world?
Apparently, yeah. You know, he's,
I don't know John, but I remember Chuck from the old days.
Yeah. Well, everybody, you know, seems to remember Chuck fondly from the old days. And then, you know, then things changed.
Yeah. Story of the party.
Right. So, Mike, thank you so much for taking the time. We said we'd, be done in a half hour, and we're at our mark. And so, thank you for joining us, folks. Listen and subscribe to Hacks on Tap. It's a great podcast, that Mike co-hosts, and, you'll hear, this kind of talk and national analysis and guests, every week. And so, tune into that as well.
Well, gentlemen, it is an honor to be on. I haven't seen my old friend Brewer here in years. I see you're still making trouble for the Dems. And Jeff, I appreciate what you've done, standing up for like rule of law, and which why we joined the cause once upon a time. So this is a great podcast. I encourage everybody to listen and tell their friends. I know I do. And it's been an honor to be on with you guys.
Thanks, Mike. Come to Michigan. Come see us. Come home. We'll have dinner.
I am. I'm going to go see my dad in Oakland County. So maybe we'll all get a pizza or some appropriate heart-stopping Michigan food when I'm out there. I'd love that.
And maybe a Coney or two.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, they had a Coney restaurant that Tim Allen put a little money into that opened in L.A. But, you know, all the old joke about Hollywood, they're only afraid of two things, carbs and honesty. They looked in the window and ran. So the place didn't last. Though I miss a good Coney dog. So we're doing it.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. See you guys. Bye-bye.
I can't believe it, but we're out of time. And then some. But what an incredible week in Michigan politics, Jeff.
Well, as soon as we catch our breath, we'll be back. Right now, it's your turn. Send us comments and questions. Email arepublicpodcast@gmail.com.
And if the Republic is still standing, we'll be back in a week. I'm Mark Brewer.
And I'm Jeff Timmer. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on all major podcast sites. A Republic If You Can Keep It is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.